With that, Chairman and CEO Jeff Immelt. Jeff, thanks.
Great, Shannon. Good morning. I'm not going to make any comments from the start about our labor practices that I guess were brought up by Austin yesterday, so I'm just going to get right into the presentation. You've been sitting around, some of the big themes. We see the economy improving, but still volatile. The execution is good. We'll see earnings growth in the second quarter. GE Capital franchise is snapping back, very valuable. We've got lots of good growth initiatives that are out there underway, and capital allocation and having lots of free cash flow remains a good opportunity for GE. Kind of the big themes that we kind of use to prepare the company and strategize around the company. We see a real reordering of the global economy, so we're probably one of the biggest companies in the world in the emerging markets. We prepared ourselves for potential of slow growth, and we've got lots of good growth initiatives underway. From a customer and customer productivity standpoint, we stand here with about $130 billion of long-term service agreements, so it puts us on the right side of the customer. Good growth initiatives overall. More government influence. I think the company's got very strong regulatory position. It's just tremendous volatility. So I think all the work we've done to improve liquidity and drive cash and great operations puts us in great shape for the environment that we see today. So that's just some of the top line. Portfolio is better. I think the work we've done to improve the GE portfolio has given us really a simplified infrastructure and capital finance portfolio. We think it's pretty well positioned on lots of the global themes. If you look on the industrial side, we're about 70% of our earnings are in services, 60% are outside the United States. Our R&D spending as a percentage of revenue has gone up dramatically over the last few years. So we like the portfolio and how it's positioned in the time period we're in today. Financially, you're going to see really strong earnings growth over the next couple of years. That, we think, is well underway with lots of cash. We should have $25 billion of cash at the print by the end of this year. We generate $6 billion-$8 billion of free cash flow every year. And kind of the four things that we think are most important for investors right now are just the value creation in GE Capital, the fact that we've got well-established growth initiatives going in our infrastructure businesses, that we've got strong operating initiatives inside the company that impact returns, margins, leadership development, and that we will be good stewards of capital, and we'll have lots of opportunities to create value as you look at the coming years. So this is kind of how I've structured the presentation around these four dynamic points. GE Capital, we're in the midst of strong earnings snapback. We think losses have peaked. We see high-value origination. Costs are lower. Funding is secured through into 2011. And the franchise is strong. We've got 8,000 originators. We've got good domain expertise in the businesses that we're in. We've got wide-open markets, wide-open playing field. So we think you're going to like GE Capital again as time goes on. We think it's pretty well positioned and has some good competitive advantage. The cycle through the cycle, and just from an enterprise risk standpoint, I think we've always done a pretty good job, even during the crisis, of being focused on spread of risk, domain expertise, match funding, some of those principles that served us well coming through the crisis. We think our losses will be lower than banks. We didn't bet on exotics. I think in many ways, our risk model stood the test of time, but we learned some things about the size, real estate exposure. I think we've done a better job on liquidity. So we got better coming through the crisis. I think from an investor standpoint, if you look at the lower right, this is just a safer and more secure financial service business. It's smaller. Its leverage is lower. The liquidity is stronger. The capital ratios are better. The margins are better. So I think we've come through this with a much stronger GE Capital than we went into the crisis. Now, just from a top-line earnings dynamic standpoint, the capital ratios are improving, and they'll continue to get better quarter by quarter. Margins are growing, and costs are coming down, and losses are coming down. So losses have peaked and coming down. I think what that means from an investor standpoint is more earnings, higher quality earnings, income maintenance agreement much lower, than any of us had thought about or talked about or planned. Commercial real estate, stabilizing, getting slightly better. And we hope to restore the GE Capital dividend back to the parent by 2012. We've got some great franchises. I just show commercial lending and leasing, verticals, which is GECAS, Energy Financial Services, and the retail business, which is retail finance and private label credit card. These are three world-class franchises where we have high margins, great origination, solid distribution, domain expertise, good cost of funds. And this kind of gives you a pretty good snapshot of some of the engines, at least in the short term, that are going to drive solid earnings growth into GE Capital. And lastly, I think, we're still in turbulence. I mean, clearly. But, I just want to give you a snapshot of how we think about the business going forward. And, what I show here is just the things, in other words, what we're trying to do in financial services is talk about things that are completely under our control. So we're going to get down to $440 billion E&I, safer funding model, lower commercial paper. We've talked to you about long-term debt and how it looks going out in the coming years, better alternative funding. So kind of a safer funding model overall. Our origination in the second quarter will be up 20%. So, we see that there's demand for credit, and our margins are way up when you think about what's rolling off the book versus what's coming on the book. When you get to 2012, there's a lot that has to happen between now and then. So I'm just going to give you kind of a point of view on where we think the business is when we get to 2012. At $440 billion, half of it probably lending and leasing. The verticals maybe being another 25-30%. And then a relatively small and focused consumer finance business and a smaller real estate book by that time period. Now, probably in 2012, we'll probably still have the $440 billion E&I. We'll still have $50 billion that aren't classic green assets or green investments. So we think even at 2012, we have the opportunity to remix the business, to grow the ability to take cash from GE Capital back to the parent. So we still have a lot of optionality. So, if I wrap up the section on GE Capital, safe and secure, dividends back to the parent by 12, lots of cash optionality, good earnings growth in this time period. And like I said, I just think this is going to be a good business for investors over this cycle and into the future. And we feel, pretty good about how we're positioned in the business right now. Infrastructure kind of X, the industrial business is X NBC, about $90 billion, about $15 billion of pre-tax profit in 2009. The big levers are technology, services, globalization, the big themes that we're using to drive progress. These are all great franchises, number one franchises. I'd say, if anything, our ability to drive competitive advantages is higher today, and these are the things that are going to drive organic growth. I think in the environment we're in today, companies that can drive good organic growth are going to be the ones that end up winning, and we're investing. Like, that is the key. Technology, we'll grow our R&D budget about 18% this year. We'll have about 5% R&D spend to revenue. That's a lot with our scale. Kind of what we're driving is more products and more price points. There's just a lot more NPIs coming through the system right now. We're trying to drive radically lower cost points and continue to try to globalize the framework. And this is a place where we think we have real enterprise value, where the totality of GE really plays off from a standpoint of being able to share ideas and drive lower cost. Healthcare is seeing a real resurgence. Healthcare share of diagnostic imaging in the U.S. has grown last year. It'll grow again this year. The number of NPIs in our healthcare business have doubled over the last 2 years. And we're really trying to drive innovation at every price point. We've got lots of high-end activity still going on. This is kind of an Alzheimer's imaging agent that will be used in PET and MR scanning. We're in many ways flooding all the price points in an area like MR with extremity magnets, and this is the wide-bore MR. And then there's just no place in the world we're not going to be competitive. We're going to be competitive in China and India with value products. So we are really focused on healthcare and focused on good healthcare growth on NPI. I know you don't hear much about stuff like your turbofan or or any engine competition. And we like to humbly every now and then give you our point of view at this moment in the meeting about how we see the engine wars. So the left-hand side gives you a sense for the last 20 years of what the CFM joint venture has done. It's just a massive installed base we built from a standpoint of technology. And then the right-hand side, the LeapX, is the sole source on the Chinese narrow body. Pratt has won a couple campaigns on the C-100 and the Mitsubishi campaign. We'll see where the re-engine goes, but I reviewed this Monday up at the research center. I like our positioning here. I like where our technology can go, and I think narrow bodies continues to be a place where GE can grow and prosper into the future. But technology, spending in technology, execution of technology is the key. This is just a locomotive story. We don't talk much about it, but we've got 13 locomotive products being introduced in the next 5 years. We dominate the North American market. We're growing the adjacencies around transportation and areas like marine and mining. So we've really been able to build this format. And look, in this cycle, we've got a chance. We've got our biggest competitor that's owned by private equity, EMD. In this cycle, we can be three generations of technology ahead in a business that is strategic to us and where we're a long-term player. So technology is really dominant, strong. We're spending a lot. And then the last place it shows up is in what we call adjacencies. If you think about 2000 to 2009, we generated about $20 billion in revenue in renewable energy and life sciences and things we call adjacencies. We have a big pipeline of adjacencies for the next decade. Businesses like offshore wind could be $3 billion-$5 billion in revenue for us. Avionics, where we're doing a joint venture in China to help us better compete with Rockwell and Honeywell and people like that, could be multiple billions of dollars. We're doing a joint venture with Intel in home health, again, could be $1 billion or $2 billion over the next 10 years. So we've got a big pipeline to try to create another $20 billion of revenue growth over the next period of time. So adjacencies are big as well. 70% of our earnings come off this page. Services continues to grow, big backlogs. And here the key is investing in the installed base. It's long-term service agreements. It's being on the same side as the customer. And GE, just from an enterprise standpoint, we're the world's best at remote monitoring and diagnostics. We build real competitive advantage across all of our platform. But this is a business that's shown us robustness in this cycle. It's going to continue to grow as we look at the coming years, and we just have a great competitive position here. This is one that's actually quite important because it goes to the installed base of all of our big infrastructure businesses. It says basically these businesses have a nominal value, let's say, of somewhere around $150 billion, let's say, when they go in the ground. They're probably at about 20%-30% of their useful life where we sit today, which says from a service standpoint, this installed base ought to generate about $500 billion of revenue over their life cycle. We're only a portion of the way there. We've got $130 billion under contract. The competitive position is even stronger. We've got more technology. I think the safeness factor, this FAA-like safeness factor, is going to get played into oil and gas and every business fundamentally that we're in. More reliability, more safety means more service contracts. So this just is a fantastic. I should just leave this up here for the next 20 minutes and just keep talking about this is so powerful from an earnings standpoint. These contractual service agreements, the reason why they work and the reason why they continue to grow is because it puts us on the same side as our customer. So the left-hand side kind of shows what our customer benefits are from a contractual service agreement and how little improvements help make them more money. And then the right-hand side just says, at 30%+ operating profit, the predictability, the reliability, the productivity embedded in the service agreements is quite powerful when you look at the future. The place where we want to grow is in this domain software, where we're going to compete with people like Accenture and IBM. And we've got about a $4 billion business in these domain spaces, these infrastructure spaces today. And these are things like electronic medical record, where we're introducing a product called Equilibria, which will be kind of the domain software piece, intelligent software piece that we've gotten from our Intermountain Health experience. Smart Grid is a big aspect here. A thing called Movement Planner, which we've been working on for 10 years with Norfolk Southern, is really showing signs of life. And a thing called Smart Landings in the aviation business, which would save 5 to 10% fuel burn software that goes on the cockpit of an airplane. So good follow-on revenue, even above and beyond the CSAs. We got a very strong position in the emerging markets. We're $33 billion in the high priority markets, as we call them. We kind of say, we don't segment the world necessarily as developed and emerging, but we talk about resource-rich markets and rising Asia, and that's what this represents, is that segmentation. And these are places where our scale, our technical capability, our relationship capability is able to give us a real competitive advantage in these regions. So we think GE does globalization very well and is, you know, again, the partner of choice in a lot of the places where we play. A country like China, you know, GE has a substantial position in China. You know, we're about $6 billion in revenue. We do a $4 billion a year in sourcing. But, you know, we've got a nuanced, I'd say, strategy in China. You know, I've been going there probably 25 years. You know, the company's had presence there for a long time. We are growing our localization, and businesses like healthcare will pass $1 billion this year. Our aviation business is growing. Our oil and gas business is growing. These businesses are being localized and show great promise for the future. And that's one key way to play China, is through localization. The second way to play China is in places where we don't have as high a market share, to do partnerships with state-owned enterprises in places like T&D or aviation, where you can create, you know, you can do what we did with CFMI 30 years ago to create big 50-50 joint ventures that are going to help us grow to the rest of the world. The third way to play China is to use the business model that's there to drive lower price points. You know, this is where the $500,000 1.5 Tesla MR is being developed. It's where a lot of the value segments can be and sold around the world, and so we capitalize on that. And then, you know, the fourth way to play China is kind of as an investor. We do partnerships on aircraft leasing, but we've stayed away from bubbles. You know, we've stayed away from construction and real estate. We've stayed away from steam turbines, things like that in China that are potential bubbles. And so this combination of localization for growth, partnering to win globally, understanding the business model and capitalizing on the business model, and being a smart investor, meaning you don't go everywhere with the same approach, you know, it helps us be strategic and long-term players in China and avoid risk and avoid bubbles. This is the place where we're going to clean up. We're going to clean up in the resource-rich parts of the world. These are places with no local competition. They like GE. They buy big and they buy broad. This has doubled in the last 5 years, should double in the next 5 years. And these are the places that really value this GE relationship, and whether it's Africa or Middle East or Brazil or all these places is really where the biggest global growth is going to take place as we look at the future. We've been talking about eco-imagination down here for 5 years. We've been talking about health imagination for a couple years. You know, these are branding opportunities. They allow us to innovate inside the company. I think they've given us good capability, broad capability, made us welcome and thoughtful on some of the big topics around clean energy and affordable health care. I think we also use them internally as ways to restage and reposition the businesses. Health care really is a different business. You know, I'd say it's run better. It's got more capability. I think John Dineen met with you guys last year and talked about 3 to 5% growth in revenue and maybe 5 to 10% growth in operating profit. We're going to do better than that. I think the business is always going to have its own cycles, but it's got more products and more price points. We're hiring 1,000 sales reps in China this year, 1,000, to sell healthcare products in every corner of the country. The amount of emerging market, and that's wide open playing field, right? That is a kind of a bubble-less Chinese market with no big competitors, and you can do the same thing in the Middle East and all over the place. We've got good adjacencies. Our own healthcare costs are under control. So we've been able to take health imagination and really make it a fantastic restaging, if you will, of the total business. Similarly, in eco-imagination, we've had great results over the last 5 years. We're going to continue to invest in clean energy and continue to invest in clean water. We think this remains a good opportunity for us. On the right-hand side, this gives us a good opportunity for our appliance business. It has allowed us to restage our water business into an industrial water reuse. We've got a good global position. We've used these big themes, these big initiatives to help stage and grow the company. Point number one, GE Capital is back. Point number two, we've got as many industrial growth levers as anybody you've seen here this week. We've got as many things going across the company as anybody you're going to see. Point number three, we're going to run the place well, right? Big initiatives on operating excellence, big initiatives on leadership development, big initiatives on capital allocation and risk management, and we should always be in the top 25 percentile of all of our peers in profit rate, return on total capital, cash conversion, and return on assets. We should always be in the top 25 of anybody you see here this week. If you look at leadership development, we continue to invest $1 billion a year in training. Our retention is high. Probably the four places we're working on are more domain expertise. People that are really, if you're going to be in the oil and gas business, you want to have oil and gas experts, you want to have aviation experts, deep domain experts in the businesses we're in. Continue to restage and reposition leadership and leadership development. Every 18 months, we have a team-based training for our 50 big P&Ls on strategy and execution and investing and just driving globalization. Globalizing the leadership base is incredibly important for the company as we go forward. Margins and cash are just great tails of the tape for GE. I think we've executed well through this downturn. We'll have 16%, 16 and change maybe operating profit rate this year. As you look out over the next few years, we see good service mix. We see a positive value gap. We just aren't seeing a lot of inflation in the things we buy, so we see a positive value gap. We see some positives. I think potential headwinds would be what goes on vis-a-vis R&D spending, which is really up to us, what happens with pension. On balance, we are really running the place well, I think, from a standpoint of operating profit. Similarly, from a cash standpoint, our working capital turns are improving. As we grow the equipment side, that has a tendency to add cash as you grow, but our turns will continue to be pretty good. GE Capital in this time period, by 2012, either from a size standpoint or from a GE Capital dividend standpoint, is going to add to our ability to drive CFOA as well. Cash and margins are things that managers are paid on. It's important for us, and we spend a lot of time thinking about it. We're using the tools like Lean and Six Sigma and sourcing strategies to help us get there. This is just a picture of some of the things we're doing on margins. Like I said, we have a positive value gap last year. We have one this year. We should have one next year. Lean and sourcing strategies are the key to driving good margin rates. From a standpoint of cash and working capital turns, one full working capital turn for a company our size is $5 billion of cash. We basically have gotten one turn over 2 years. We'd like to stay somewhat on that trajectory. Again, we're driving cycle time, operating excellence. I do monthly detailed operating council reviews with our key teams. We measure specific activities in all the businesses. This is really key. GE Capital you like, lots of growth, operational excellence around margins and cash, and then just a little bit on capital allocation. We got cash. We should have $25 billion by the end of this year, assuming that NBC closes. Beyond that, we ought to be generating $6 billion-$8 billion of free cash flow a year. The way we think about it is a dividend growth in line with earnings growth by the end of this year at about a 45% payout ratio, somewhere in there. The preferred, as it comes, we're going to be thinking about lots of good approaches on the preferred. Acquisitions, I would say, in the $1 billion-$3 billion range, all in infrastructure, energy and oil and gas in that space. Very opportunistic around buybacks. I'd say under $22 a share, this is a high return opportunity, and we'll launch a buyback by the end of this year. So I think we've got enough cash to do all four of these things, right? That's the way I think about it, is we can pick and choose, we can pick the right place, we can pick the right time, but dividend in line with earnings, with a reasonable payout, opportunistic buyback by the end of this year, acquisitions on strategy that low risk, that makes sense, we're going to see some, and the preferred. These are all going to be accretive to investors, strategic for investors as we look forward in the future. And then on M&A, guys, look, we've done a lot the last 10 years. A ton of dispositions, right? I mean, you guys can always question, did you do them fast enough? But we did them. We got through, I think, the bulk of the businesses that didn't fit or were the highest risk. It added volatility as we went through it, but we've got a better company today. It's simpler. It's closer to the GE core. It's easier to understand, and we feel good about that. And, you know, over the last 10 years, look, we have spent time studying every deal we've done in great detail, studying with the board. We've spent about $65 billion in the last 10 years. Only 55% of that went into infrastructure, went into our core, you know, and that's in the next 10 years, that's going to be 100%. And, you know, I would say as I look forward in the future, it's going to be energy. It's going to be all the infrastructure stuff. I'd say energy, aviation, transportation, small, medium. If a large deal made sense, we'd look at that. Healthcare, we're going to stick more on the small side on deals, but that's how I look at it. NBC, we had to play a lot of defense in order to play offense with NBC. I mean, we had to take a business that was primarily just a broadcast network at the beginning of the decade and transform it. That's what we did from an M&A standpoint. Now that's Brian Roberts' responsibility working with us on NBC, and we did some white space deals that are hard to get a good return. And I'd say in the future, we're either not going to do that or we're going to do them via partnerships. So really, the future is going to be infrastructure. It's going to be small to medium-sized deals. It's going to be, you know, big execution. All those deals we've generated returns far in excess of our weighted average cost of capital, our WACC. And that's how we're thinking about how we go in M&A in the future. So, you know, here's the four points. You know, capital, $440 billion of ENI, $8 billion of earnings soon. You know, it's going to snap back. I'm not going to give you a specific quarter or time or year, but we're on that trajectory. $15 billion of earnings in 2009 in infrastructure. We've got big levers we're pulling to see that and watch that grow. Real operational focus on remaining in the top 25% on all the key operating parameters inside the company. And $25 billion in growing cash that can be applied and allocated in a strategic and effective and investor long-term investor returning friendly ways. So that's kind of the overview and the strategy of the company. Just a little bit on kind of, you know, the environment's, you know, it's getting better. You know, I know sitting in this room this week doesn't feel that way, and it's not that Europe's not a concern, because it is something we all have to think about. But when I look at just the stuff we're thinking about, we had the upfronts. The advertising market is very strong. You know, we're seeing early cycle improvement in financial services, early cycle improvement in aviation, spares, consumer, healthcare, transportation, general service business, but there's still a lot of volatility. You know, I think Europe is something that we're all looking at. Regulation, you know, in a lot of different areas adds volatility to the mix. So I'd say the environment is improving, but we're cautious because of the volatility that's out there, and I want to be thoughtful about that. You know, no real update to the second quarter, you know, framework per se, and annual framework. This is what, you know, the top part is what Keith and I showed you at the first quarter earnings. A couple updates. You know, we will have upside to the original framework that was flat. I think most of you have seen that. We expect earnings growth to begin second quarter of 2010. We'll likely have positive orders growth in the second quarter of 2010. And I think when we think about FX is going to hurt revenue, but But earnings, there's really negligible impact when I think about the big move that the euro dollar has made. So that's kind of a near-term thought on currency and where we stand and things like that. And then, I think we don't give guidance anymore, but I don't want you to think we don't think about stuff. When you don't give guidance, you're still working the dynamics around the company all the time and thinking about the framework. So I thought I'd just kind of walk you through the stuff that we're thinking about and working on. Financial services, look, I'd say we're going to get some kind of regulatory reform. We're okay with where it is today and how it comes through. I'd say we'll see what happens in the next few weeks, but we're okay there. Financial service taxes, are going to go up, and we've all said that and planned it. But other than that, guys, financial services in the early stages of recovery, bounce back, and most indicators I look at are pretty positive right now in financial services. Energy, the headwind is going to be I think the U.S. wind market. We're kind of tied for number one with Vestas. We have the lowest cost and the highest reliability. So we can have as much share as we want to in wind, fundamentally. We've got a lower cost point than any of the Chinese companies. We've got the highest uptime and reliability, and that's measured by all of our customers. But the U.S. market, I think, is going to be choppy. There's going to be headwinds on wherever energy policy goes, things like that. So we're cautious in the U.S. wind market. But other than that, we love our gas position. We've got above 50% market share in the heavy-duty gas turbine market. Gas is going to be favored. Our emerging market business is very strong. We see a lot of positives on the services side of the energy business, and we think we're very well positioned. Oil and gas, we all have to wait and see what happens in the Gulf on oil and gas. I mean, nobody really knows for sure. Maybe that'll delay some projects. We just don't know. Beyond that, we have a great LNG position. We've got a great global position. We've got a strong backlog. And if there are higher standards in the oil and gas business over time, that's going to be probably beneficial to GE as we look at it. And we'll just have to see how that all shakes out. Aviation, we've got a lot of product launches coming through. We've got the GEnx, the LeapX. The choice for us is just how much do we want to spend in R&D over the next couple of years. But the tailwinds are spares are getting better. Cost base is good. Share position is very good in commercial aviation. So we see lots of powerful and positive things on the plus side on the aviation business. Healthcare, we worry about our customers' profitability. We worry about government funding of healthcare systems and where that's all going to go. Those could be headwinds. Tailwinds, look, we've seen now the reform has been clarified in the U.S. The average age of a CT and MR in the U.S. is 10 years old. 10 years. The difference in the procedures you can run on a CT scanner that's 10 years old versus one that's new is substantial. I mean, just substantial. Emerging markets are blowing it out. Our technical depth is strong. We see some positives in healthcare going out, although we're cautious on the business overall. Transportation, there's still 3,500 parked locomotives, but sometimes things get better just because they can't be as bad. And that's the way I would think about transportation. We're lapping easy comps. Our share position's good. We see some positives on transportation. Consumer, we worry about housing. We worry about unemployment, things like that. But we see some good orders growth in the appliance and lighting business, good margins, and generally positive dynamics overall. Corporate, pension, who knows where it goes. It's been a headwind for all of us probably that's presented here this week. And the tailwinds are probably less restructuring and all the capital allocation stuff we can do with the cash that generates positive shareholder returns. So those are the pluses and minuses. So, like always with GE, a lot going on. Lots of things we're managing as a company. But within the construct of the earnings growth in this company is going to be substantial in the next 2 years. It's going to be substantial in the next 2 years. And, we'll manage the pluses and minuses on this page accordingly. So just to wrap up, good financial performance, lots of cash. And then I think the four value creators are making GE Capital a great, valuable franchise again, driving good organic growth in the infrastructure businesses with lots of initiatives, running the place with excellence, consistently over time and generating shareholder value with excellent capital allocation. So that's the G story. Let me open up. Yeah, Scott.
Jeff, it was intriguing when you mentioned that you're hiring 1,000 salespeople in China. That just sounds like a really big number.
In healthcare.
Yeah, in healthcare, that's right.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Which leads to the question of the health imagination. Do you kind of feel like you're finally where you need to be with the cost of the product and a local design for China, made in China product? That is that the indication, really, when you hire 1,000 people like that, that you really feel like they have the product, or just maybe some color on that?
Yeah, no, Scott. So our credibility in healthcare is, you know, it's been a troubled business over the last 2 or 3 years, right? But I think the focus we've had is to really drive technology across all the price points, to have good focus on customers and segmentation, great service business, and then invest in emerging market growth, invest in sales and service and emerging market growth. So, Scott, when I look at China today, really, I sit with a team that can beat Mindray on its own turf, that has cost positions and products that can be sold at every price point with high margins. With high margins. I mean, we can do 55% a contribution margin product that has a $2,000 price point. So now we're going to add salespeople in Saudi Arabia. We're going to add salespeople. This is going to be the healthcare story. And I just think cost. Now that's one piece. I got to tell you, you know, we're working on molded coil MRs that allow us to take the cost out of a 1.5 Tesla magnet MR, sell it at a price point no higher than $500,000 and earn 50% contribution margin. That's the future of healthcare. So I'm quite, and if you think about China, that is the bubbleless part of China, right? I mean, when you're on the ground in China, there are hundreds of millions of people that are going to go to clinics for the first time. The government wants that to happen. That is the bubbleless part of China. And there's no local champion, right? It's not like the government's picked five guys that are going to win in healthcare. We're one of the five guys. You know, we're on the ground. We're local. So that's why I'm so bullish, Scott, on healthcare.
And just as a follow-up, I mean, you know, in the last upcycle, you know, your incremental margins were rather disappointing, and that may reflect kind of the OE aftermarket mix, but I think we calc them out at somewhere around 10% versus your peers at more like 20%. I think in this down cycle, you took a lot of fixed costs out, from what we can tell, and an awful lot of working capital out. What is your sense, or do you think about targets, or what's your kind of sense of upcycle incremental margins this time around, and how it may, as you say, you want to be top 25% of peers, but obviously in the last upcycle you weren't there.
So, Scott, look, I think we had two headwinds in the last cycle. One was we had a massive OE build, and the other one was, you know, at the end of 2001, we had sold all these gas turbines at extraordinary margins that people didn't need, you know. So we had this comparison on the last gas turbine bubble that made it quite hard. This time around, I say 70% of the industrial earnings are in services. The CSAs give us lots of levers on incremental margin there. I think very good handle on the value gap. You know, I think the real criticism of us is that we had a real mismatch between selling long and buying short. So we did deals that had lower margin and had to chew through them in the last cycle. And I just think we're smarter about how we do the value gap today, right? So I think those are things that are better. And then you know, it's just the counter to that is there's so much new engine launch and aircraft engines. You know, that's the, you know, what you're spending in R&D and stuff like that. That's the counter. Yeah. Yeah. John.
Sorry.
Oh, cool. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
A couple questions, Jeff. First one on GE Capital. You talk about return on investment of about 2%, and when I look at it historically, I think I sort of see a 2% peak on ROA, and a lot of that $1 to $2 billion around commercial real estate transactions and tax, also another obvious benefit. When you look at that very big number in terms of the return, how do you get there without the real estate, or are you counting on the real estate?
You know, Well, you know, the margin, Steve, of what's rolling off and what's coming on. It's all about CV. You know, and I would say, look, this is an aspirational goal right now, 2%. It's also like an originator cannot do a deal in the field today. It will not get approved. It will not get through our deal team unless it's got that. So right now, we've got origination. There's a lot of liquidity, to be honest with you, but there's not many players left standing. And so it's all about managing that CV on the way in. Now, look, we are modeling a GE Capital that has is at least an 80% debt business, maybe 20% equity, something like that. So, look, it's just one of the lessons we learned is that that's a level of volatility we don't want to have back in the business as we go through it. You know, we've got, I don't know, $50, $60 billion of cash on the GE Capital balance sheet right now. Let me tell you guys, I could do a lot of real estate deals right now. I'm not sure you would applaud it. I'm not sure you'd sit there and say, way to go, you know. But by the same token, in areas like distribution finance, there's no competitors. So kind of the grinded out, grunty industrial finance business, which is what we built GE Capital on, that's wide open spaces. So I'd say 2% is aspirational. Your question is a great question, you know, but that's the discipline we want to have. And we just don't want to have a lot of equity that's part of that. And the tax rate, I mean, you can model for yourself as it's going up.
Question here.
Yeah, okay, Bob.
Yeah, just following up on that question, you said intriguingly that capital could get to, you know, 440 and $8 billion net soon. You know, what qualifies as soon?
You're going to have to talk to Keith about that. No, okay. I mean, you know, it's just at some point it's just arithmetic, you know, Bob, in terms of where the losses go and how it plays out. And, you know, I the point I make is that the assets are there. We're putting them on at high margin. And as the losses go down, the rest is arithmetic.
Okay, we'll get to that. Second question is, you know, you're looking at the NBC joint venture form later this year. That would suggest some dilution to 11 earnings. You put up on your slide there, you know, a couple of alternatives. I mean, what would be your view of how you could offset any potential dilution that might come out of that joint venture?
You know, look, I think the way to think about NBC is their business ought to be better next year than this year. The earnings are going to come down, you know, kind of consistent with the ownership stake, right, stuff like that. It would be easy to do it probably just if you just did a buyback. It would be quite easy. You know, it's linear. That's not what we want to do. You know, what we really want to do is run the company for the long term, make smart decisions about capital as we go through it. But, you know, there's lots of alternatives with how to fill in that size of gap. Yeah. Steve.
Jeff, just looking at the pluses on the bars, you know, your total company is two pluses, GE Capital's three pluses. If I do the math, does that mean industrial is up in 2011, or is it too soon to make that call?
You know, look, we haven't done any S2 or anything like that on the industrial business. So the way I look at it, Steve, is you got 70% of industrial earnings are services. Highly likely that grows, you know, throughout this cycle. 30% is product, and that's going to be dependent on, you know, markets and how much we spend on R&D and stuff like that. But, you know, it's probably too soon to think about that. But, you know, we expect the total company over, you know, a couple-year time period to be growing.
And then just on the commercial real estate front, you guys had it in the tailwind section and for 11 and 12. Is that just the credit cycle playing out in real estate? And maybe what are you seeing there? And is it looking a little bit better than?
You know, we're still cautious on commercial real estate as we should be. We do see some liquidity coming back into the marketplace. The leasing percentage is going up. Rents in some markets seem to be stabilizing. If you look at third-party estimates of properties, that rate is either stable or not going down by as much as it did. But we're still cautious on real estate. I think we put it up there as kind of a later cycle improvement, you know, as something that could keep the GE Capital dynamics, I'd say, going in the out years.
When is your next mark-to-market analysis for the
realized
losses?
I think it's maybe in the third quarter.
Okay.
But, you know, the team's grinding it every week.
And then, sorry, one more question is on the language of the dividend. Grow the dividend by 2011? That means by the end of 2011?
No, it's by the time we get to 2011.
So into that, so you would have an announcement before 2011?
Yeah, that'd be, you know, again, this is the board approval and stuff like that, but that'd be my expectation, yeah.
Jeff, question down here.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
You know, you've been helpful with giving us the kind of formula behind the dividend thinking, and I wonder if you do the same on the buyback thinking, $22. What's the kind of plumbing behind that arithmetic?
You know, Terry, it's just when we look at the earnings growth, and, you know, it's we pick it a little bit because it's symbolic of when we did the equity raise and stuff like that. But you know, when we look at the basic earnings and dividend growth of the company versus where the stock price is, you know, there's nothing really hard and fast around 22. It's more to say we want to be opportunistic and, you know, in that range or some places where we can do so.
Yeah, just, you know, trying to think, you know, longer term, beyond 2012. Yeah, if you're not doing as big acquisitions in the future as you've done here over the last decade or so, you know, maybe there is some arithmetic that could be helpful to people.
Yeah.
You know, secondly, just in terms of coming back to the Europe issue, and really more from a GE Capital perspective, we've seen, you know, some rates and spreads move around kind of dramatically here. Market definitely getting nervous. Doesn't sound like you're changing plans on kind of pace of pre-funding 11 or any of your thinking on liquidity. What do you need to see to pull that lever?
Terry, look, we're I'd say cautious on Europe, just like probably everybody else that's been here this week. If I give you a sense for the company overall, you know, we don't have we really don't have much exposure to sovereign debt. You know, we've got a European manufacturing base and a European revenue base that are more or less matched. So while it may have some impact on revenue, it shouldn't have a big impact on earnings or make it put us at a competitive disadvantage vis-a-vis other companies that are there. We've got a lot of cash on the balance sheet right now, so our liquidity position is very strong. We're funded well into, you know, 2011, and we've got some alternative funding that we can still do. So I'd hate to give you a specific on, you know, if we saw this, we'd do that, you know, other than to say, I'd say we are respectful of the environment because we've lived through this. And so we want to make sure that we understand how it goes. But, man, the company has never been in better shape in terms of weathering volatility than we are right now. So that's what I'd say.
Over here, Jeff.
Yeah.
Question, first is an observation. It's been a long time since you've been down here at EPG that you weren't bombarded with questions about NBC and how did it fit in the portfolio. So first, how does that feel?
Sprague didn't know what to ask. I mean, it's... I should have kept my mouth shut, right, Jeff?
So the question is on GE Capital and the plan for shrinking the portfolio down to 440. And to be realistic, that plan was formulated in a very different market condition. And you now you're feeling the losses have peaked, and you talk about the ability to put on originations at, you know, very attractive margins. Is there a time where that 440 can get revisited and where you can start growing the percent of GE Capital again as
you know, Dean, what I say is what we've presented to you both last year and this year is a plan that we can execute that's in our control. And so, you know, we don't need a lot of help or anything like that. We can get to 440 more or less on our control. We don't have to make big dispositions or things like that. And so I would say it in two sides. You know, if you get to 2000, and we've made estimates about not wanting to be more than 2% of the unsecured debt market as being, you know, so we've kind of said, okay, what's the VAR for the total company? You know, we don't want to be in a position where volatility in GE Capital would make you have to reduce the GE dividend. You know, we've had a bunch of parameters that have set that. And then you say, if you got out in 2012, two things might happen, right? One is some franchises that we think are great today might not be as good, and there might be people that want to buy them, and we should be very thoughtful about that, right? So we'll look at maybe we want to shrink faster, and we can do it without, you know, with a gain or in a capital-efficient way. And on the other side, you know, markets may be better, and maybe we can incrementally grow, a larger size in that level. But the point I made that I, and maybe I should reemphasize, is that when we get to 440 at 2012, we'll probably still have $50 billion plus of non-green assets. So we can still remix and grow even inside that 440 framework. I got to do Jeff, and then I got to do Martin, or else he'll be pissed. So let me do Jeff and then Martin, if I'm allowed, Shannon.
And I'm not going to ask what you're going to sell or anything. I'm actually.
I thought you were going to ask me about lighting. Are you going to sell lighting? I was going to say, Jeff, come on, man.
Appliances.
You know. Yeah, there you go.
I'm actually interested in how you'll handle the JEX dividend, kind of in light of Dean's question. I mean, I think that's probably one of the ways that you end up modulating
Sure. The
growth of, you know, of GE Capital. So your thoughts about that, and then also just to understand a little bit the prior question, just about opportunism on share repurchase. I mean, your old MO was you'd lay on these massive multi-billion-dollar plans, and you were in there every day. Is that the type of approach you would envision, or will it actually be more opportunistic?
So, Jeff, I'd say on the first one, the way we can easily govern the GE Capital growth is by the dividend. And I think we can do it both in an orderly way, saying, okay, there's going to be, you know, again, safe and secure comes first. And I probably, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that about GE Capital. Safe and secure comes first, right? So that's number one. Beyond that, you know, they'll at least have to pay their payout, which is 45% of their earnings back to the parent, and we can govern that as time goes on. And then, you know, there might be a day where you'd say, look, we're going to sell one of the GE Capital businesses because it's going to release $20 billion of cash. And you can use up to the parent, and we can use that cash to grow the industrial business. I think we've coming through the crisis, 50-50 is not a stable place for the company to be. We know that, you know. There's probably an aggregate size that's not good for the company. There's a VAR that says we don't want volatility to make you have to reduce it. So we've got some things that the board and the management team are clearly aligned on as it pertains to GE Capital. And then there's lots of optionality, you know. And if we can effectively, you know, deploy capital from financial services into industrial, we're going to do it. And I'd say there's more openness to that today than there's probably ever been. Share purchase, I just think we may be more programmatic as time goes on, but we're going to be more opportunistic, I'd say, in this cycle that we're in today. Smartin, last one, Shannon.
Okay. We spent a lot of time on the GE Capital balance sheet, but what of the parent and how And I have a series of questions on that. First of all, you keep claiming $25 billion of cash on hand at the parent company at the end of this year. Some of that is already allocated to pay back the GE preferred dividend. There are day-to-day cash needs. How much of that $25 billion is actually free allocatable cash? Then, going back to the liability side of the balance sheet, GE at the parent company level has maintained a relatively low debt to equity ratio. Where do you think the debt levels at GE parent can be over time as necessary in supporting GE Capital as well as the capacity for share repurchase?
So let me answer those two, and then Shannon's going to give me the hook, we can talk about it. But I would say, Martin, I wouldn't say that we have a hard and fast rule on the $25 billion, how much, but we're going to carry more cash on the balance sheet than we did in the past, just to be safe. We haven't picked a specific number, but that's for sure. You know, I'd say we used to have maybe $2 billion cash at the GE parent. We'll have more than that in the future. In terms of the, I don't think we ever, when we sit down, think about, I would say, a segmented look at the balance sheet necessarily without GE Capital. You know, in other words, in many ways, it's about preserving a high rating for the totality of the company, including GE Capital. So on your second question, I'm not sure I've got a good answer other than to say, you know, we think being a AA or AA+, depending on which rating agency, is a good competitive rating, and we think about it more as in the entirety. Okay, Chad, thanks.
Last thing on your way out, we actually do recycle these, so there's a basket you can drop your name tag. That's it. Thanks, everyone, for coming.